Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkush, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we try and bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from both on and off the field.
Coaching issues in Washington, ownership change in Cleveland, injuries all over the place, we break it all down.
And it's all just ahead on this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkush, along with Senior Editor Eric Edholm, as we host for you this weekend. We welcome in Nolan Naraki, Senior Editor at Pro Football Weekly, and also the author of our Pro Football Weekly Draft Preview Guide magazine and draft preview book each year. And Nolan, as you make your way around the NFL, interesting stuff out of Washington, where third year of the Mike Shanahan era, clearly the first 2 years were not what Dan Snyder has hoped, and yet he appears to, Snyder the owner that is, have kept his promise to not meddle as much as he did in the past. But boy, they made a huge commitment to the offense this year. They overpaid badly for second tier wide receivers, of course had Robert Griffin III in their crosshairs and paid dearly to draft him. What is happening here? You know, it's the defensive side of the ball that maybe could be the bigger problem.
Yeah, from what I'm hearing, Hub, defensive coordinator Jim Haslett is looking for a new contract, and they are at odds on that defensive coaching staff with Raheem Morris coming on board to coach the DBs. From what I've been told, he is the guy that they're looking for to be the heir apparent, you know, to work with offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan down the road. And, you know, I think it could make for a difficult season this year.
You know, Nolan, I'm curious about, you know, long-term implications here, because the bottom line is the perception is that Robert Griffin III could be better young than Andrew Luck because he's got so much more help. And yet if this defense struggles, it could be that much more difficult on a young quarterback as well.
Yeah, it really could. And you look at Mike Shanahan's history in Denver, there was always somebody to blame on the defensive side of the ball. They went through coordinators constantly, and I think it's a situation that we're going to see again this year. The other issue is that Raheem Morris is very well-versed in the 4-3 defense. He came up underneath Monte Kiffin in Tampa Bay, and I think that's what he's most comfortable with. Under Haslett, they're running the 3-4, so if they have to begin transitioning to a 4-3 defense, it can only stall the progress that defense makes down the road.
All right, speaking of leadership, and we go to Cleveland, Nolan, and it's an interesting situation where there appears to be a transferring of ownership from Randy Lerner to Jimmy Haslam III, a guy who's been an unabashed Steelers fan. He's talked about it much in the past. The timing of this really seems surprising to me. Not only are we talking about right at the start of the season during training camp, but also in a time of great unknown as far as the leadership of this team is concerned. Mike Holmgren, the team president, what's his future there? We've heard Joe Banner is interested in this or involved in this ownership group. You know, what is the future of the head coach, of GM Tom Heckert, of Holmgren? Give me the spiel on the Browns.
Well, I think they're going to have one more year to really prove themselves, but from what I've been told, Mike Holmgren's maintained a part-time residence in Arizona. He's largely been a figurehead. If you look at the history of Joe Banner through the years, you know, he doesn't mess around as it relates to salary cap expenses or any outside expenditures. He's going to clean that up quickly. I expect him to take a more prominent role in the organization. If you remember in Philadelphia, Tom Heckert was the GM there, and he was, you know, promoted upward in Cleveland, but they clearly looked to get rid of him. I don't expect him to have a long tenure in Cleveland as soon as Joe Banner comes into play.
Well, Nolan, as we get ready to kick off the 2012 regular season, the Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine is available on newsstands everywhere. And in it, of course, we do in-depth scouting reports on all 32 teams, particularly positional grades. We look at the coaching staffs. I know you've been working on factoring all of that together, players, coaches, and intangibles, and coming up with maybe the top five most talented teams in the NFL and then the bottom five. Now, we're talking strictly about talent. Tell us about your top five first.
Well, I think it starts with New England all the way around the board. They are stacked and loaded on that roster. They only got better through the draft, and they have arguably the best coach in the league in Bill Belichick. So I think they are at the top of the pyramid. San Francisco's close behind, with Jim Harbaugh really establishing himself as a rookie head coach last year. Then I think the New York Giants, Green Bay Packers, and Pittsburgh Steelers are all clumped closely together. You know, you look at the quarterback in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers. I think he is one of the best, but Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger aren't much worse, and the head coaches of all three teams are all out outstanding.
And maybe it says something about my personality. I want to know about the bottom five teams. And we just talked about two of them. Washington, you have listed at 28th. That surprises me a little bit. I think there is some talent on this team. And also the Cleveland Browns, they're your 31st. So really the second worst team in the NFL, according to your rankings here. Talk about those two teams and also the other three, Indianapolis, St. Louis, and our dead last team, the Minnesota Vikings.
All it's going to take in Washington is an injury to the quarterback, and I think they're going to have a hard time, just like they did a year ago. They didn't really have a true starter, and I think as a rookie, Robert Griffin could be really tested. Indianapolis, to me, is clearly going through a rebuilding process. It's going to take them some time. St. Louis, to me, is the one at number 30 that really could be a little bit better than where they initially are ranked by their talent and coaching staff, and I think that's because of what Jeff Fisher could potentially bring. And rounding it out is Cleveland and Minnesota, who I think are both going to have a tough time this year with difficult schedules.
All right, Nolan, thank you very much for your work on all those stories. We'll visit with you again next week. Up next, we're going to spend some time in the AFC North on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Hub Arkish and Eric Edholm in studio. We've got senior editor Mike Wilkening on the PFW hotline. And, Mike, the Cleveland Browns, we just talked to Nolan Araki a little bit about. A lot of people surprised. There had been some rumors that Randy Lerner might be looking to move his football team. And yet for the announcement to come so quickly, or unexpectedly, I should say, at the opening of training camp has left a lot of people looking around saying, boy, what are the after effects going to be from this? What are you hearing about it?
Well, I mean, I think you have to start looking first at President Mike Holmgren, because a couple years left on his deal, in his mid-60s or thereabouts, obviously the end of his NFL career is probably closer than the beginning, so you have to kind of wonder what his future is going to be. You also have to look at the head coach in Pat Shurmur, because Pat Shurmur was basically someone that had the stamp of approval, quite obviously, from Mike Holmgren. He's only in his second season. Brown struggled quite a bit last year, and so I think when it comes down to it, everybody's kind of looking to see if the dominoes start to fall here, because it's pretty natural to think if you've got an ownership change, you could have some changes that would come with this. And this has been an organization that has gone through waves and waves and waves of changes over the years. So let's see if another round of change is due here at the offing.
Mike, very quickly, I'm curious. I know all the focus is on the future of this ball club, but any word on why Randy Lerner's getting out? He seemed to be very involved. He's been spending money. It's a young team getting better.
It's hard to say. Al Lerner was the driving force behind the expansion bid for Cleveland almost 15 years ago now. When Al Lerner, Randy's father, passed away, Randy sort of stepped into that major ownership role. He has not been a guy that has sought the spotlight. He's not someone that talks to the media all that often. He's hard to get a read on. To me, it's not entirely surprising that this would happen, because I don't get the sense that he's someone that was ever out in front, like some of the other owners around the league were heavily involved in decision-making and things like this. I will say this about Randy Lerner. He has been decisive at times in terms of changing blueprints, where he said, okay, we're going to make a change at a coach, we're going to do things like that, and he has not been shy about spending money. He has been motivated to do, I think, the right things in terms of putting a team that would be a winner on the field for Cleveland. It just has not worked out to this point.
All right, Eric, let's bounce down to Dallas for just a moment or two. Eric Edholm, of course, on the NFC East beat, and Jerry Jones had been somewhat quiet as training camps opened. The Cowboys, one of the last camps to open, but he certainly opened it with a bang, first telling everybody he wanted to hear. He was so pissed he hadn't even talked to Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
Then he spoke with Dez Bryant, and what did he have to say about that conversation?
Well, I mean, he's now set a clear and indistinguishable set of guidelines that Bryant has to follow to continue being a Cowboy. You know, I mean, he's looked terrific at times in camp playing football. We've never really doubted his ability as a football player. We've doubted his maturity and his focus as a player. We've doubted his influences both in youth and in his current day, and the continued distraction that keep coming up, including this incident with his mother. And even though the mother's not pressing charges, you know, Roger Goodell's unhappy and Jerry Jones is very unhappy, and he still could face a suspension. So basically, no more shenanigans. He's got to stay online, on track, and as we've reported, you know, right now they're leaning towards not picking up his second contract. So it's a big deal. Not only does he play well, but he has to stay in line and not get himself into this trouble again.
And Eric, quickly, if you can, I'm just curious, from the day the Cowboys drafted him in the second half of the first round, where he had slipped to because everybody knew about the potential for these problems, Why did it take this long for Jones to figure out he needed a rigid set of rules?
Well, they felt like they could do it without sort of putting too much on him. They felt like, the surrounding, influences of the Cowboys program, guys like Michael Irvin, who had turned himself around, other people wanted to be mentors for him, and the coaching staff was a pretty strong unit at the time. They just felt like, look, we can provide a good environment for him and don't have to come down on him hard like the Rams would on Janoris Jenkins or something like that.
All right, let's get back to Mike Wilkening. Wilkie with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC North. I love this quote from Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers. Quote, I'm good. It's okay, just sore. I have a little torn rotator cuff. Close quote. So he's telling us, as opposed to a big rotator cuff, he has a small one, just a little tear in the rotator. I will tell you this, for a quarterback, a tear in the rotator cuff, good or bad, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't sound like something you particularly want at that position. But nonetheless, Ben Roethlisberger has downplayed the injury, and this is someone that has played hurt throughout the years. It is a little concerning that you hear the words partially torn and rotator cuff in connection with the Steelers franchise quarterback. And what an interesting start to camp, and not always in a good way for Pittsburgh. You've got this issue with Roethlisberger with the shoulder. You've had Mike Wallace in the contract. They give Antonio Brown the contract extension. A little bit more news coming out of Pittsburgh camp than we're used to seeing this early in Latrobe.
Yeah, Mike, another quote from Roethlisberger. He says, quote, that doesn't heal. We just have to hope it doesn't tear the rest of the way, according to the doc, close quote. I think you got to keep a real close eye on Ben Roethlisberger. You don't play quarterback in the NFL with a torn rotator cuff. We'll watch that story, as well as a bunch more to bring you in our next segment. A quick commercial break first, and then more way we hear it right here on Pro Football Week. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric at home, and we are visiting with senior editor Mike Wilkening. And Wilkie, much like the Steelers' questionable news about Ben Roethlisberger, I am very concerned by a report out of Detroit that Lions running back Javid Best has not yet been cleared to play after missing most of last season following his second concussion. Again, some strange quotes. General manager Marty Mayhew, according to the Detroit Free Press, he said, eventually he'll get cleared. I'm very positive. I feel very comfortable saying that. Just to question the timing, it's up to those guys. He said he was a little surprised, a little disappointed that Best wasn't cleared yet. Mike, it's been the entire off season. He still is having problems from a concussion suffered almost 9-10 months ago. This has got to give you pause as to whether Javid Best can be counted on this year.
Yeah, I think the expectation was that at some point he would be cleared. And again, Mayhew has kind of indicated that that will be the case, that it has taken this long. I think if you want to look at this optimistically, you would say, well, from a prudence standpoint, maybe that's what the doctors are doing, that there's really no need to put Javid Best out there until you absolutely have to. But he's a key part of this offense, and this is a team that, from a running back depth perspective, could have some issues again if things kind of hold the way they are. Again, it's very early, but you've got Best, who hasn't been cleared yet. You've got Michael LeSure, who was cleared after the Achilles injury that kept him out last year, but had a hamstring early in camp. They've been really depending upon Kevin Smith and also Stephen Logan, who's more of a kick return guy at that position. You have to wonder how they're going to proceed here, because again, this is a team that really was a very much pass first offense last year, almost out of necessity. They may have to go that way again if things hold this way from an injury perspective.
29th in the NFL in rushing last year. The Lions have got to get better. They didn't make any big offseason moves. We will keep an eye on Javid Best as training camp proceeds. Let's switch back with Eric Edholm now in the New York Giants from his NFC East beat. And a terrible story for the Giants, as it looks like Terrell Thomas could have another problem with that ACL he's already had operated on twice. They gave him a contract extension in spite of the fact him missing all of last season. They allowed Aaron Ross to get away in free agency. And now, Eric, they're not sure yet, but this could be another long-term deal.
Yeah, it could be a season-ending injury. We don't know yet. He's scheduled to meet with Thomas is scheduled to go down to Alabama to meet with James Andrews, the noted orthopedic surgeon, and find out what the story is with the same right knee that that the ACL tore in the preseason last year, tore back in 2005 when he was at USC, and they're wondering why it's happening like this. Now, there is some hope. They can't tell yet. They're going to have to find out with exploratory surgery that this is not a full tear, that this could you know, be helped by some healing, and that they could have him at some point this season. They're not sure yet what the case is. Either way, Prince Amukamara, the last year's first round pick, who really didn't play much as a rookie, you know, got off to a bad start as far as injury is concerned last year, didn't get on the field till late in the year, didn't really show much. He's got to step up. I mean, they haven't seen enough from him to know whether it was worth the investment of the 19th pick in the draft back in 11. So, you know, this is a tough situation. They made the most of it last year. They got lucky after the first wave of injuries, but you're right. Ross is gone and not a lot else on the roster beyond Amukamara and a third round pick named Jayron Holsley.
And I should be clear, I said they gave him a contract extension. In fact, Thomas was a free agent. They gave him a deal in
That's
March
right.
that $28 million, but only a million of it guaranteed. The big payoff would be an option next March if he can stay healthy, so at least a limited risk there. Let's switch back now to Mike Wilkening and talk a little bit about the Cincinnati Bengals. And, Mike, I know I, for one, was surprised to hear that Mike Brown decided to give Marvin Lewis a contract extension through 2014. This is a guy, as he heads into his 10th season, who is below 500, 69-74-1. He's made three playoff trips in those 9 years and hasn't won a playoff game, and yet now he is locked in for a few more years. Tell us what's going on here.
Well, I think it builds upon a trend of stability in Cincinnati, which you've seen before, where guys maybe have been on the staff for a long time and maybe the results haven't been what you would have liked, at best mediocrity from the Bengals, but, you know, they have been better these last few years. They've made the playoffs in two of the last 3 years. People are going to say, look, Lewis has not led them to a playoff win, but the 09 season was a surprise, certainly a great coaching job by him. And last year, look, this team was expected to do nothing, and they were sharp right off the bat without an off season. This is a very good coaching staff that they have, with Mike Zimmer at the coordinator spot, extended as the defensive coordinator earlier this summer. You've got Jay Gruden there, did nice work with the offense. They've built, I think, a roster that is probably more sustainable and a better roster than they had a few years back when they won the division title in 05 with Carson Palmer. They're building something here, and I can understand the reason why Marvin Lewis would want to re-sign and why they'd want to re-sign him. I think some of his best coaching has come in these last few years.
And, Mike, in the last 10 or 20 seconds, I mean, is it possible that Lewis just kind of held Mike Brown's feet to the fire and said, look, I need a deal, or I'm walking at some point? Did he threaten him at any level here?
It's hard to say. I don't know that for sure, but I do know this. When they went through the deal a couple years ago when Lewis's contract was to expire, that was a huge storyline at the end of that year, a distraction. I don't think this team needs it. There's high expectations, and again, I think they think they're building something good here in Cincinnati.
All right, guys, Marvin Lewis, definitely a class act, and I'm certainly happy for him. A lot went right for the Bengals last year. We'll see if they can continue that this year. We take another quick commercial break, and we'll talk NFC South and North in a moment. Yes, we are. We now welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. Dan covers the NFC South as well as the Chicago Bears. But, Dan, I want to start in the South with the New Orleans Saints. All right, they got that goofy, huge picture of Sean Payton overlooking the practice field. I'm told that was Tom Benson's idea. We'll see if that works out or not. But with Drew Brees now in camp and happy, he turned his focus away from the Saints for a moment. He took some unveiled shots at Commissioner Roger Goodell this week.
Well, we know the Saints, as an organization, are not real pleased with the commissioner after the bounty investigation and the punishments, which they felt, they didn't see enough evidence of the allegations the NFL was making against them, and they felt some of the punishments were unfair. So it's not a real big surprise to hear Drew Brees say this week that he doesn't think anyone trusts Roger Goodell, and that he says. It feels like there are times when the league has come to a decision over a matter in a case before calling a player into the office and says the interview with Goodell would be just a facade when it takes place. And so he thinks, with players that need to come to talk to Roger Goodell in an instance like this, he said that he would be very hesitant because he thinks the conclusion had already been reached. So, Roger Goodell was asked about these comments. He said he hadn't seen him at the time. He said, it kind of comes with the territory. That he admires Drew Brees, so there's going to be friction between these two entities for some time after an event like this. So I don't think this is probably the last time we'll hear a Saints player or maybe even Drew Brees throw a shot at Roger Goodell.
Well, and I think, Dan, to be clear here, listen, there was a bounty program. Nobody's disputing that. Some of these guys had to be punished. Two of them aren't even New Orleans Saints anymore. But I think what really upset players was that in the appeal process that Roger Goodell made himself judge, jury, and executioner. And that's not the way it works in this country. You go to a trial court, and then you go to a different appellate court. And I think that's what Breeze and so many players are upset about, that Goodell heard the appeals as well as made the official ruling.
Well, there's no question. That's what Breeze is referencing, that you don't have a fair shot when you go in to talk to Roger Goodell because he's made up his mind already. Breeze, when reporters followed up with him about this week, he kind of backed off, said he didn't mean any disrespect. But I think it's pretty clear the players are not only feeling disrespect, but feeling like there's really no justice when it comes to Roger Goodell and his rulings.
Eric, you would hope that this would be a good time for the Minnesota Vikings. They're finally getting their new stadium, albeit 4 years away, but they're going to get a beautiful new building. And yet nothing seems to be going right down there. And I don't mean to make light of this story, but apparently Adrian Peterson had an allergic reaction possibly to some seafood, and they literally had to have medics intervene?
Yeah, I mean, he went into anaphylactic shock. I guess it was either a case of him being allergic to it or some bad seafood or something like that. We don't know exactly what happened, but a scary situation, I guess we found out what it takes to stop this guy. I mean, he's such an amazing athlete. He's trying to come back from this ACL injury, and this sets him back a day or two. The good news on the knee front is that it appears that he's making good progress. He says he wants to play in the preseason. That wasn't necessarily part of the plan before. Earlier he'd said, look, I just want to be out there week one. But now it appears they're trying to get him on the field for some work, and it's a good thing they avoided any trouble with this fish thing, that, he avoided disaster, and he's healthy and trying to come back.
And then compounding things on the players and the coaches, Rick Spielman is one of the real good guys in the NFL,
yep.
And he's got a contract extension in hand, so he's probably okay as the GM, but we know the pressure is on Les Frazier and these players, and I guess owner Ziggy Wilf thinks that he's got a potential NFC North champion on his hands.
Yeah, so he says, I'd like a vacation home in the Hamptons, too. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen, but it's Wilf, and he doesn't talk a ton. He'll show up to camp, he'll show up to game, hear situations like that when it's merited, and, he's a confident guy, and he feels like he's got some good pieces to build around. Obviously, he's gonna say good things about his team, but I don't know if him saying that puts any more pressure on Frazier. I don't know if it's like, okay, well, if they finish second at 10-6, that he's gonna get fired because, well, he didn't win the division. It is, however, a little bit of a bold statement and maybe a little bit of a strange one, too.
Well, and Dan, particularly when the Green Bay Packers and the Detroit Lions are reigning playoff teams in your division, and a lot of people think the Chicago Bears are going to push both of them, so where do the Vikings fit? For the Bears' purposes, they're excited about a lot of things, including the addition of running back Michael Bush.
Yeah, this is a 1-2 punch that the Bears have been waiting to see, and they finally had a chance to do when training camp got underway with Matt Forte's contract in hand. There's some interesting comments from Michael Bush, not quite embracing the role that the Bears have had in mind for him, and one that I'm thinking that he was pretty clear about what the expectation was going to be for him. He thinks he's an all-around back. Matt Forte, though, if you talk to league evaluators, is the guy you want out there on passing downs, whether he's blocking or catching the ball. So, I don't think the Bears were too upset to hear that Michael Bush thinks he can be an every down type of guy. I think you want players to think that, but it's going to be interesting just to see. The Bears have struggled really to find that perfect complement for Matt Forte. It hasn't worked out with guys like Marion Barber and Chester Taylor. They signed Michael Bush thinking that this was the answer. They needed to be the answer.
And what about the quote unquote other acquisition? Brandon Marshall, obviously a huge part of their offseason. I mean, how has he fit in, and how are he and Jay Cutler getting along as a passing combination again?
Well, for Bears fans, this has been a long wait to see a player like Brandon Marshall on the field. And so it's a little bit foreign to them to see a big wide receiver with his ability, but it's a nice sight for him. Every indication thus far from training camp that we've heard is that Brandon Marshall has come out and been focused and playing very well. It looks like him and Jay Cutler are, picking up where they left off. There's some kinks to be worked out in this offense, though. There's no question about it. And Jay Cutler still needs time, I think. We're early still to get that right rhythm with his entire receiving corps.
Yeah, guys, I'm reporting from Bears training camp. I can tell you Brandon Marshall is a thoroughbred, but Cutler is a little out of sync. That will come. We take a quick commercial break. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Hub Arkish and senior editor Eric Edholm in studio. We're on the Pro Football Weekly hotline to the PFW offices with our entire editorial department. We now welcome in associate editor Arthur Arkish. And Arthur, the Houston Texans really dodged a couple bullets this past week. One of the problems with starting training camp is guys come in, they get nicked up quick. Andre Johnson, their all-pro wide receiver, who's been troubled by injuries the last couple years, went down with a groin. Dwayne Brown, left tackle, went down with a thigh bruise. But it looks like both of those injuries will be minor.
That's correct. The Texans absolutely dodged two major bullets with two major key cogs on offense, starting with Andre Johnson, who, of course, missed close to 10 games last year while dealing with injuries to both hamstrings. So he went down with a groin injury on his own. It was non-contact. And while it looked like it might be pretty bad at first, it sounds like he is going to be okay. He's going to miss a few days of practice, but they don't expect it to be anything serious. And in the case of Dwayne Brown, who got rolled up on another one of those freak accidents, he went in, had x-rays, everything came back negative, and it appears to be good there. So in terms of all the offensive line turnover and wide receiver position with all the young guys coming in, the last thing that this team could afford was serious injuries to these guys, so they have to be considered very lucky right now.
All right, Arthur, hang on a second, because I want to talk to Eric about another one of his NFC East teams, and the Philadelphia Eagles got a real scare. Jason Babin, who had like a gazillion sacks last year, apparently has nicked up a leg, and he could be out for a while, but they hope it's not going to threaten the regular season. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right, Hub. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if we don't see him in the preseason, and I don't know how much it's going to affect the team up until week one, but, you know, it is starting to test what was some pretty darn good depth. They already lost Mike Patterson, his situation. Obviously, we hope for his safe return with the brain injury. Then you've got, you know, the good depth I talked about. Colin Jenkins can slide out to left end, but really this is a golden opportunity for Brandon Graham. First round pick a couple years ago, has had multiple knee surgeries, hasn't shown what he can do. He was a terrific player in college, standout at the Senior Bowl, has not been that breakout player. Remember, they traded up for him. He's the left end. I mean, he's the backup left end, so you may see Jenkins out there a little bit, but this is a great opportunity for Graham to show that he's now back and healthy and ready to contribute for this defensive line.
All right, Arthur, another one of your AFC South ball clubs, the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's interesting to me, I guess Mike Mularkey is getting rave reviews from his first camp with the Jags, but they're not having a very good camp. I mean, the bottom line is that the offense is kind of a mess. It's a key camp for Blaine Gabbert, and yet, you know, Laurent Robinson, Mercedes Lewis have started slow. Justin Blackmon's not even there yet. MJD is not there. Defense looking okay under Mularkey, but they've got big problems on offense and aren't going to get fixed until they get these people in.
Yeah, there's no question. And while you talk about the slow starts for Mercedes and Mercedes Lewis and Laurent Robinson, certainly, it's not what you want to see. But, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head. They need to get Justin Blackmon. They need to get Maurice Jones-Drew, the two guys they were planning on, counting on the most to help Blaine Gabbert take a step this season, obviously have not been in camp for different reasons. So that's the biggest problem. You talked about how Mularkey's earning rave reviews. He really is. He's gotten the guys ready to play. The guys are there anyway. And he said that the slow start for the offense is to be expected. That was just part of the install and having a lot more to do, a lot more turnover. Of course, Mel Tucker came back on defense. Most of the starters are back on D. So a lot of the changes came on the offensive side of the ball. There's certainly been some rust. Gabbert has appeared to be erratic. That accuracy that was an issue last year has not improved, but we hear it's a lot about mechanics and that it's something that they hope with close work with Greg Olson and Bob Rutkowski, and as they continue to coach him up and get this better coaching, that they think he's going to show some improvement as the camp progresses.
Arthur, in the last 30 seconds or so, I want to talk about another one of your teams, the Titans. You know, Mike Munchak did a great job in his first season last year kind of managing this team to a 9-7 record. They have some promise. I think this is an interesting situation for them, but they've got to figure out who their quarterback is going to be. There are reports out there that they want Jake Locker to win this job, and yet you're hearing it's still a competition. Tell us what's going on at that position.
Well, I'm hearing that they're not going to make any decisions too quickly. I think the report that came out that said that they want Jake Locker to win the job, of course they want Locker to win the job. He's the 8th overall pick last year. They have so much invested in him. But what I hear is that they at least owe it to Hasselbeck to give him as much opportunity as possible to hold off Locker. Both of them have been up and down. They've both shown some good things. They both had some areas where they need to improve. So I don't expect this decision to be made too quickly. I think they're going to take their time. They're going to make sure they've weighed all the options, and they're going to see who the best guy is.
All right, guys. Thank you very much, Arthur. We will talk to you again next week. Right now, we take a quick commercial break, and then Kevin Fishbane checks in on the AFC East. Training camps are open throughout the NFL, and we've got a lot more insider's information, news notes, and rumors to give you. We now welcome in Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane. And Kevin, in the AFC East, a lot of focus on offensive line. We start in New England, where I think the Patriots expected Logan Mankins to be a little bit slow coming back from the ACL surgery that he had. But they weren't expecting Brian Waters to be a no-show, and I'm not sure that they know or any of us know what's going on there. Is he talking about retiring, or do they still expect him in camp?
Yeah, it's a very strange situation, Hub, because all reports indicate that he's not going to retire. That's kind of the immediate thought that came to mind, and everybody asked him. He said he's not retiring, and Bill Belichick just said it's personal reasons, and he missed spring practice, but it doesn't look like he was expected to not attend training camp, and this kind of is really testing their depth there, because you mentioned Logan Mankins has been out. You know, they have Robert Gallery, the former number two pick, but it doesn't seem like, you know, that's an ideal situation for him to be starting either of those spots. You know, we know Dan Connolly can move around, and they have Dan Copen to play center, but that offensive line, which on paper looked like one of the best units in the league, is now starting to look a little shaky, and that's an important group for that team.
Yeah, I'll give you personal reasons. I think he wants more money. I think he looked at the deals that Dan Connolly and Copen got this offseason and said, I think I'm worth more than those guys. I want to get paid. But we move to the offensive line for a different team just down the road in Cortland, New York, and the New York Jets. Obviously, it's a huge circus down there with Tebow and the whole, you know, Mark Sanchez situation. Antonio Cromartie speaks up. But they've got a real issue at right tackle. They tried to address it with the Jeff Otaw trade. It was voided. He didn't pass the physical. Do they go back to Hunter now?
Well, they kind of have to at this point. You know, Hunter is the starting tackle, and there's really no competition for him. The Jets have been very strange about this whole thing. It's been not strange to what the Jets are, because it's what they usually do. Tannenbaum and Rex Ryan come out and speak very highly of a player that's been much maligned by the fan base for good reason, Wayne Hunter. But then, they go out and get a Jeff Otaw. You know, they draft a tackle in the sixth round. They bring in a couple veterans earlier in the season to kind of bring some competition in for him. But then they keep talking up. So it's a strange situation. You know, Wayne Hunter gave up a lot of sacks last year. Penalties were a huge problem for him. There's a kid, Austin Howard, who was a practice squad guy last year, who's been impressing a lot of people there and has been running as a second team guy, but nobody expects him to take the starting spot. They could still add someone later on in training camp or in the preseason to provide some competition for Hunter.
And Kevin, of course, just in case that locker room was settling down, you've always got Antonio Cromartie to screw things up.
Yeah, Cromartie comes out and says he's the second best wide receiver on the team because he took a couple reps in practice at wideout, and that ticked off Chaz Schillens and some of the offensive players. And Rex Ryan said that he talked to Cromartie, and you know that wasn't going to happen. Pretty much said that wasn't going to happen again. He didn't want to talk about it, but it didn't seem like Cromartie certainly knows how to ruffle people's feathers on either on the other team or on his own team.
Yeah, but didn't Rex sort of create this situation by bringing this guy in and Mike Tannenbaum and opening the floodgates with his comments? I mean, didn't he sort of create this environment where everybody feels like they can comment on anything and say whatever they want?
Oh, absolutely. And they've been like this for years. I remember asking somebody over this in the spring, I said, are they any different? You know, Rex Ryan spent all offseason saying, we're going to change team chemistry. We're going to get better. I need to get a better grasp on the team. And they said, no, the players are still talking just like they always do. I mean, you look around, Santonio Holmes being like, oh, a two quarterback system doesn't work. You look at, you know, Darrell Revis and the possible holdout, this Cromartie thing. And Chaz Schillens was very open and said he wasn't happy about it. So, you know, the players have not changed, that, and it doesn't look like it's going to be changing anytime soon.
Miami, we've got a couple stories. Of course, a quarterback battle goes on, but more than that, Chad Johnson is back, both literally and figuratively. His name is Johnson again after getting married this past summer. No more Ocho Cinco. And he's the cocky old Chad, and he even talked about what his career might be after football. I guess he's thinking about being a porn star now?
It was one of the more entertaining press conferences I ever watched. I wonder if the Dolphins might have regretted streaming it live, because it was full of curse words from Chad, who kind of apologized, but then said he didn't care. I mean, he was up there. It was a ball. I mean, for the writers there, it was just great fodder for them. And Chad, the one thing I will say about Chad's press conference, he was very open about the fact that this camp is for him to make the team. He knows that he has to earn a roster spot. He says, look, you know, I'm bleeping 34. You know, he goes out there and admits, I have to go out here and earn a roster spot. Last year was an embarrassment. You know, he only had 15 catches in New England, and he's out here and working hard. hard to try to make this team. Whether or not he does, whether or not he makes an impact is another question.
Now, thank you, Kevin, for editing out Chad's comments, his salty language. We might approve of it off the air. On the air is a different story. And real quick, in the last 30 seconds or so, you know, this quarterback situation isn't going to fix itself. One of these guys has to step up. You've got David Garrard. You get the idea that if he plays well at all, he might be the starter from day one. And yet you still have Matt Moore, who won some games last year. My question to you is, how does Ryan Tannehill figure into the equation right now? Does he have any chance of winning this contest in week one? Or is it more of a plan where let's hold him back until we need him, maybe week 8, week 10, whatever it may be?
You know, everything we heard in the spring was that Tannehill is clearly the number 3, not going to start until maybe midseason if the wheels fall off and they've got to put him in there because they don't want to rush him in. He's looked good so far after signing his deal. The first couple of days of training camp, he's looked pretty good. He actually ran with the first team for the first time on Thursday. Joe Philbin said he earned that. It's going to be a very tough situation for that Dolphins coaching staff, a new coaching staff, if Tannehill outperforms Moore and Garrard, because at that point you have to make the argument that he should be the week one starter. I don't think a lot of people expect that, but it is something to watch, especially when preseason games get underway.
We will keep a close eye on that situation. We also have to take one more commercial break, but we've still got the Publisher's Pen that will be coming up next.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Pub Arkish.
Well, Eric, it's been an interesting week for Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL. Not only was he taken on a little bit by Drew Brees, as we discussed during the show, but he also kind of ruffled some feathers with some comments earlier this week when asked about the fill-in officials that they're going to use while they have locked out their full-time officials. They're not full-time. That's part of the problem. He said he's not at all worried about playing preseason games with these officials that they'll be using. And yet some people are saying, my God, you're trying to protect the safety of these athletes, their million-dollar assets. I don't know, Eric, is he a little off base on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think the players are smart and they're going to try to get away with whatever they can with regular officials, with guys who've been doing this for years. So imagine that you're taking guys who aren't even BCS caliber. I mean, these are lower level college officials, recently retired guys, guys who are out of the game for a reason, whatever it may be. They're going to try to get away with whatever they can. And I think that compromises the safety and the health of the players, whether the players know it or not.
And Eric, let's be clear. Pro Football Weekly takes no editorial position on, quote, which side is right and wrong in this labor dispute. I don't know who's being reasonable, but I do know that the NFL needs its regular officials back. We've been talking for years about sometimes when the quality of officiating struggles in the NFL, it's because these guys aren't full-time employees. They do have other jobs. They just come in on weekends. Nonetheless, they are the best in the world. And what the commissioner in the NFL has done in the last couple of years is change rules to promote player safety, which we think is a great thing. But they've put a lot of the rules in a gray area now where if you're not a professional, if you're not the top of the line, if you're not an NFL official, it becomes that much more difficult not only to call these games efficiently, but to do what you're trying to do, which is to protect the health and safety of these players. So our word to the commissioner is don't settle for your backups. Get this worked out and get the real guys back in as soon as you possibly can. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks, as always, to Randy Meyer, the best engineer and producer in the business. Syndication Network is our home studio. We thank them as well. And most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. We really do appreciate it. Please join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.